Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We're gonna play on and stand strong.
Solo and Dibs, turn the game on.
For you, it's time to play ball.
Solo and Dibs, turn the game on.
It's becoming a thing.
The Steiny is unbelievable. The enthusiasm is just exploding through your radio dial.
That's how you bring it home. Right there with Steiny. That's how you bring it home. What's up, everybody? Jolo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game. Thanks for hanging out. We got a big show in store for you today. Matt Maiocco is coming up in about 29 minutes with all the latest on the coaching and GM search for the 49ers. Have you seen this list of candidates?
Everyone's on it.
It's everyone. I mean, Dibs, I think you're next Thursday.
I hope so. I mean, you go down the list, and seriously, it's about 20 names apiece. It's out of control.
Ticket window at 8:45. We get a pair of tickets to see Green Day at the Oakland Coliseum Saturday, August 5th. Lincoln Kennedy is going to join us 1 hour from now at 8:05. Here comes your update.
Let's talk Golden State Warriors. Gentlemen, they rally in Sacramento after a rough start. They get the bounce-back victory. Kevin Durant contributing.
Curry screens for Draymond. Draymond goes down the lane, pass inside Iguodala, up top Durant. It's a three, and it's money, cold, hard cash.
Tim Roy, the call here on 95.7 The Game. Steph with 30, KD had 28. Warriors beat the Kings 117-106. Joe, a bounce-back victory, but not necessarily a terrific performance.
A win's a win, but for the Warriors, it's going to come down to what happens in the fourth quarter, specifically ball movement. That's been the Achilles heel this year, especially in their losses. They go ISO basketball too frequently, but I don't think it's a major concern at the moment. You have a new scorer in Kevin Durant who has to break some bad habits. And playing in Oklahoma City alongside a guy like Russell Westbrook, who loves to drain that shot clock before either taking a bad look or before passing it to Durant with no time left, that puts in a bad spot. You got to break that habit. And once this team figures out ball movement late in games, they're going to be cooking just like they do through the first three quarters of every other game.
Warriors back home for a four-game stretch starting tomorrow against Miami. Story number two, we're down to the final eight in the NFL after the wild card weekend has concluded. There'll be some Fresno State represented.
Rodgers scanning, time running out again. What a play, Adams! Touchdown!
Joe Buck, economy of words with the call as Green Bay beats the Giants. Lolo, Devontae Adams and company look pretty good.
That's what we do from Fresno, but it was interesting to watch Aaron Rodgers. I tell you right now, I'm a fan. His pocket presence, his Houdini X, his ability to buy time, it's like no other, man. Foot position is unbelievable.
And Green Bay advances. Pittsburgh advances as well, as do Seattle and Houston. Story number three, the 49ers interview tour continuing today. Back east, Jed York and Parag Marate set to interview Redskins OC Sean McVay for the head coaching job. Panthers assistant GM Brandon Bean will get a GM interview. More on that throughout the morning. The update brought to you by Big O Tires. Big O Tires, the team you trust. I'm Dan Dibley on your home of the Warriors, Miami in town tomorrow right here on 95.7 The Game.
Thank you, Dibs, on this Raider Monday, brought to you by Antioch Toyota. Go to AntiochToyota.com today and the Oaks Card Club. We could rehash what happened in Saturday's game, but how much is there you'd really like to discuss in a 27-14 loss that brought an end to a fantastic 12-4 regular season? So we're going to go ahead and look to the future. What is next for the Oakland Raiders? Some of you are going to be lighting up the phones. We want to hear what you think about the roster, what you think about the coaching staff. 888-957-9570. Low, right out of the gate. Do you see the coaching staff remaining intact? And when I talk about the coaching staff, I'm not talking quality control and near the bottom of the food chain. I'm talking about head coach, offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator. Are those three back next season?
No, Joe. I think there's some hot seats. I think both offense and defensive coordinators are on the hot seat. I think one seat is hotter than the other. in his defense. And I'm not just saying, oh, well, Lorenzo's just saying this because he doesn't like Ken Norton. No, I like Ken Norton. Played against the guy. I think he's a good coach. He's a great linebackers coach. But here's are the facts. Jack Del Rio took over. He said, you know, Ken Norton, you're my DC. You're my defensive coordinator. But I'm going to take over play calling. That's the head coach taking a job that he hired a coach and saying, you're not capable this game. You're not doing a good enough job. And I'm taking it. That does not happen often in the National Football League. That doesn't happen. So if I'm Ken Norton, I'm putting my name out there. I'm getting fillers. I'm looking for other jobs. Because if you look at Ken Norton a couple years ago was talked about as a head coach potential. So Ken Norton wants to be a head coach one day. All these things are in it. So if I have the opportunity to go get Wade Phillips, absolutely I'm getting Wade Phillips and I'm overpaying for him. And people are going to say, well, he's the one who took Jack's job. Jack's going to feel inferior. No, he won't. Why? Because he doesn't want to go anywhere. All Wade Phillips wants to do is D-coordinate. He's 70-some, almost 70 years old. Wade Phillips wants to be a DC. He's not trying to be a head coach. Jack should not feel threatened. And this guy will change that defense because he knows how to run that 3-4 defense. He's one of the elite coaches.
When you spend $10-plus million on Sean Smith, you have one of the league's elite pass rushers in Khalil Mack. You go out and you spend quality money on Bruce Irvin. You spent quality money earlier on Malcolm Smith, who was a Super Bowl MVP. You spend a first-round pick on a guy like Carl Joseph. You've addressed, you've spent money and big-time resources on the defensive side of the ball. So when you are a 12-4 team that finishes 26th in total defense, a lot of people are going to question what went wrong there. It's one thing when Cleveland stinks on defense. It's another thing when a 12-4 squad stinks on defense. Marcus in San Francisco, thank you for calling the show. How do you feel the franchise should handle the coaching staff moving forward?
Gentlemen, good morning. How are you? Hey, Lo, it's your boy. What's happening?
Hey, what's up, Marcus?
Hey, what's up, man? I'm surprised that you're already giving up on Ken Norton Jr. Now, I know that Wade Phillips would be a special find for us if we grabbed him. But, you know, don't you think cohesion? As a player, you know, don't you think cohesion has been a big part of the Raiders' problems from personnel, staff, players, coaches? Don't you want to see some kind of cohesion with the DC, the OC, and the head coach? And don't you think it would impact the players to lose a DC after one season? I mean, I'm more disappointed with the people who are padding up, putting on the helmets, and going out there and playing. I think people are missing tackles. People are missing assignments. They're missing their gaps. You got Sean Smith, who's the Giants, our quarterback, not jamming anybody on the line. I think it's been poor play. And, you know, I think they gave him one more shot, one more year, because you want people to know their assignments, know where they're supposed to be lined up, and make it happen. I am disappointed that we didn't get more pressure on the quarterback on Saturday. I was surprised that we couldn't get there and sack him one time. But I put that on the players, man, not on the DC. I think that we have a really good core. You look at the guys who are up as free agents, and we have about, I think, 12 or 13 free agents on our team. Bring back Andre Holmes. Bring back Malcolm Smith. But I do agree we need to address inside and middle linebacker. We need to address DBs for sure. And do we keep Latavius Murray? I love the Tay train, but there's been rumors saying that Isaiah Crowell up there. And what do you think about that? You know, I'll leave this with you guys. Which free agents do we keep on our own team before we look elsewhere to get the complimentary players we need to make a big push next year?
Marcus. Lot to digest there. Let's start low with what he was addressing with you. One more year of continuity with the coaching staff.
It sounds good, and Jack's going to have that decision. But this has not been 1 year. This has already been several years with the defense, and when you say, okay, well, here's a guy, and you have to put the onus on players. I get that. But you also have to put onus on coaches. Coaches' job, they're called coaches because they're supposed to coach players up and get guys in position to make the plays. And you look at Wade Phillips, and that's all I'm saying. If you look at Wade Phillips and see what he's been able to do, Jack Del Rio was the defensive coordinator for the Denver Broncos. He had all those pass rushers. He had that same defensive guys that were there. Wasn't able to win a Super Bowl. His defense wasn't the top five. Wade Phillips come in 1 year into 3-4, the same defense, and he's your top defense. Your defense wins you a Super Bowl. So it goes to show you that coaches do have a huge impact on to determine the outcome of the games if you have the talent. I believe that the Raiders have some talent. I still believe that they have some holes. I just think as a coach and as a player, if someone replaces you, as a head coach says, I'm going to do your job, Ken Norton. You're my DC, but you don't seem – you're. Why would you take over the play calling if you believe this coach is good? What, did he have a cold? Did he have the flu? Did he have a bug in his eye, Joe? Why would the head coach take over play calling?
It's an excellent point. Jack Del Rio was asked over the weekend if there were any changes coming to the coaching staff. Here's what he had to say.
Well, we'll see how it goes, you know. Opportunities come up for guys. You know, we were able to get that done last year, and we'll just, you know, see how that breaks for us this year. So we've got a good group of guys. You know, they work hard. They care. So, yeah, we'll see where that goes.
If you loved your assistants, my thought process would be no changes are coming. Someone might get an opportunity to take a step up. I can't control that, but that's not what that was.
Right.
That was the we haven't made any final decisions yet. That's what that says right there.
And to Lowe's point, I mean, that sends a pretty clear signal when you take away play calling from the guy whose job is mainly to be the play caller on defense. And you take that away from him because you're unhappy with the way things are going. And I think Marcus was the caller.
Correct.
To his point about continuity, Lowe, is it more of an issue with the offense to have continuity than it is the defense? Because from my viewpoint on the outside, you know, you talk about the offensive coordinator and the quarterback. It's important that they have a long-standing relationship. But does that carry over to the defensive side as well?
Here's the thing. When you run a 3-4, 3-4 is still a 3-4 defense. You've got three down linemen and you have four linebackers. So, yeah, maybe a little different terminology, but you're still doing the basic 3-4. Wade Phillips is a 3-4 type of coach. So the way that this team is built, the Raiders that is, it's got 3-4 personnel. Great outside pass rushers that can get after the quarterback. That's the kind of defense that you want. So if you're built that way, if you go bring in another guy who specializes in the 3-4, a la the Dick LeBeau's, a la when you see the Wade Phillips, those are guys that still can enhance your 3-4 package. So I'm just looking at it saying, hey, look, here's a guy that's out there. Here's a defensive coordinator that's shown that he can win. Here's a guy that you look at his track record, what he's been doing at the 3-4, seen what he did in San Diego. Go look at San Diego's Chargers defense when Wade Phillips was a DC. He's not a guy that's going to threaten the head coach. He just wants to do what he does well, and that's make defenses great again.
I believe it all starts with a question. Any decisions that are going to be made over at Raiders HQ all starts with one question. What do we need to do to make the AFC championship game next year? Because next year making the playoffs will not be good enough. Next year making the playoffs and fizzling out in the first game, no matter who's hurt, won't be good enough. You have now moved the bar one step further. That's what you've been trying to do over the last few seasons. Derek started 0-10 the one year, and then they got the win over Kansas City. Then you come back and you start to get competitive. 2 years ago, I talked about dropping that scoring differential. You're outscored by an average of 12 points per game. Let's get more competitive. Last year, they came back. They were outscored by less than a field goal per game. This year, it was about learning how to win late. They couldn't do it against Pittsburgh last season. Chicago, we remember all those games. What did they do this year? They won games late, right out of the chute. They did it in New Orleans. And they did it throughout the season on way en route to a remarkable 12-4 record. But next year, 12-4 isn't good enough. Next year, getting in isn't going to be good enough. Next year, the expectations are going to be the AFC championship game. That's a fact. That's a fact. No one's going to come back next year when you sign a quarterback to $20 million a year and did what you did this season, and they're going to say, getting in is going to be good enough. It's going to have to be the AFC championship. So what do you need to do? Can Ken Norton get your defense as it is to the AFC championship, because if he can't, you got to make a change. The reason for that? You don't have a ton of money to spend on the defensive side of the football. This is not a team that's going to be able to go out and sign A.J. Boye from Houston to play corner and some other road graders right in the middle who can eat up space and free up the linebackers. You will not have those resources. You are bottom five in available cap space at the moment. Now, you release some players, make some moves, you'll be able to free up some cap space. Derek Carr's about to get a big contract. Khalil Mack is a year away from getting a big contract. Amari Cooper is a couple years away from getting a big contract. You got to think about the future. You can't go lock yourself into all types of big-time deals because you won't have the space for the guys you drafted who are young and big-time contributors. That's what this is all going to come down to. More on that in just a bit, but for now, you know how we do every Monday at this time.
It's time for Raiders on the 15.
Raiders on the 15s brought to you by Dolan's Lumber, doors and windows, lower prices, better service, higher quality. 12-4 was the final result for the regular season in Lowe. While the playoffs didn't go as people were expecting, there's still a lot to look forward to next year with this team.
No question, man. My guy is simple. It's a guy that everyone talks about week in and week out, and they say he can change games in the drop of a hat. He's a guy that can get after the quarterback. That's none other than Khalil Mack. People talk about this guy's defensive player of the year. He's continuing to show why he is an elite pass rusher and an elite defender. This is, even though they came up short in the playoffs, you know one thing. You got a guy that's a pretty prolific pass rusher that's going to be here for a while.
Dibs, what do you got?
I've got a positive from late in the ball game, and you know, you look at a loss like this, it's hard to find things to really hang your hat on, but here's a moment that both of these men will forever remember.
First and goal, 8-yard line, Cook in the gun, Rashard to his left, Holmes right slot left, Holton inside of Amari. Here's Cook throwing for the end zone, caught, touchdown. Andre Holmes, bullet throw there by Connor Cook. That was a nice throw, Tom, in the red zone to pound that ball in right through the Texan goal line defense.
Not the signature touchdown Raiders we were hoping for, but that game was already well lost. But for Cook and Holmes, certainly, Joe, one for the memory banks and maybe some momentum in the offseason for both.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dibs. On this Raider Monday, brought to you by FH Daily Chevrolet, drive a little, save a lot, and Dolan's Lumber, Doors, and Windows. Reggie and Philly, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Listen, I'm not even going to harp on Ken Norton Jr. in the defensive coordinator position, because to me, that's a no-brainer. That's low-hanging fruit. Everybody and their mom can call and complain about Ken Norton, and they'll all be right. That's too easy for me. I want to talk about the offense, because to me, when Derek Carr went down, that was a chance for Bill Musgrave to silence all the critics and truly prove his worth. People will look at numbers and say, oh, they had, what, the sixth-ranked offense, scoring offense. They were topping the scoring offense, topping overall offense. Derek Carr covered for a lot of Bill Musgrave's deficiencies. We talked all year about the Raiders starting slow, and then they have to come on to win games late. Derek Carr putting the team on his back, coming on to win games late. I called here after the Sunday night game, and I took y'all to church, and Lil Neil, you amen me up, because I talked about Bill Musgrave's lack of situational awareness and situational play calling in that game where Derek Carr was out of sync. He was injured. They were averaging 4.6 and 4.5 yards per carry, both the running backs, and he dropped back and threw 61 times. I think his lack of creativity, because we look at Amari Cooper's production and how it went down, when you look at guys like Antonio Brown and Odell Beckham, and you wonder how are they so productive when everybody in the stadium knows they're getting the ball. That's because Ben McAdoo and guys like Todd Haley, they're smart enough to move these guys around, get favorable matchups. I see Amari Cooper lined up on the same side of the field all the time. It's just like, just line up and beat your man. How come they're not putting him in the slot? How come they're not moving him in motion? It's finding the matchups to get these guys open. I just think the lack of situational awareness and the lack of creativity on Bill Musgrave's part, and it was masked by Derek Carr being an MVP, having an MVP year this year. I'm sorry. I'm not sold on him. I haven't been sold on him all year, and I think he needs to go too. I don't think Jack Del Rio is going to do it because of the statistics that Carr put up, but I think he needs to go as well as Norton does.
Thanks, Reggie. Appreciate the phone call. Low. Musgrave, we focused on the defensive side of the ball, but Bill Musgrave, is he an individual that's going to be able to take this offense to the next level? If you've got a franchise quarterback, an MVP candidate at quarterback, you should be able to get a lot out of this offense.
Reg, I agree with you. We all talked about that. He wasn't throwing the ball well, and they should have been running because they were running the ball well, and they kept throwing the ball. It wasn't wise. So when you're talking about Musgrave, were you correct? Absolutely. Now here's a question. Do you get rid of two coordinators in 1 year? That's kind of tough. And here's why I think that Musgrave is going to get another year. I think that Ken's gone this year, and after next year, maybe Musgrave. But here's what you have to realize. If you have a quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, what does he do? He checks out of plays. He takes over. He makes it happen. Brady, a play comes in. Brady doesn't like it. He's able to do it. Big Ben, all these guys, they have that ability because they're students of the game. Drew Brees, don't like a situation? Guess what? Coach gave me the play, but I'm going to alter out of it because I know what to do. Derek Carr, that's what you got to realize. And Reg, that's what you have to realize too.
because, like you alluded to, Derek Carr can hide a multitude of faults by coordinators by getting guys in position to be successful no matter what the play that comes in. So that's why I think you can hold on to Musgrave for a year, but does Ken Norton have the ability or the talent to hide the imperfections of those calls that they make on defense? That's the million-dollar question. That's the coordinator question. And I think that answer is no, but you have Carr that can hide a lot of different things. Defense, they can.
From the 510 on the PenskeAutoSales.com text line, hey, Joe, are you ready to give Osweiler any credit yet? No. I would say this as it pertains to Bill Musgrave. How many openings do we have for HC jobs around the NFL right now?
Six or seven, yeah.
Bunch of them. 49ers are open. San Diego's open. Go all the way around the league. A lot of head coaching jobs are open. Who are the guys being interviewed for these jobs? Coordinators. Highly thought of coordinators. Josh McDaniels is a hot commodity, isn't he? Well, he happens to be the offensive coordinator of one of the best offenses in the business. Kyle Shanahan, a hot commodity. He happens to be the offensive coordinator of the Atlanta Falcons, one of the best offenses in the business. Bill Musgrave is the offensive coordinator for one of the best offenses in the league, the Oakland Raiders. He also oversaw the development of Derek Carr from second-round pick out of Fresno State to MVP candidate in the NFL. Has a single team reached out to the Raiders about interviewing Bill Musgrave for a head coaching job?
I haven't seen that story. No, in case I missed it, I think the answer to that would be no.
Has a single team reached out to the Oakland Raiders about interviewing Ken Norton for a vacant head coaching job?
I would refer you to my previous answer, Your Honor. I'd say that I'm either I missed that story or it's not out there, sir.
Actions or lack of actions in this case may speak louder than words. Jack and Cordelia, thanks for waiting on hold. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. Hello. So I know Ken Norton's your friend, and I don't blame you at all. You don't want to come down too hard on him, but I'll do it for you. I think he's awful. I don't like making head coaches scapegoats ever, but this is a case where, to me, the biggest sin a head coach, can have is to be in love with a scheme and not really understand the players he has. And Ken Norton's in love with his scheme. He thinks he's in Seattle. If your front four is not getting – I don't like blitzing, but if your front four is not getting to the quarterback all season long, you got to do something. It's clear Bruce Irvin is not an every-down player. I don't know why everybody hypes him up so much. He's undersized. He gets swallowed up by linemen. So at some point, you got to do something. Move guys around. Get Khalil Mack in position. Be a little more creative. I know we're not a perfect – we don't have all the personnel we need yet to his defense, but there's things you could do to make this defense not so vanilla. And then the guy that was just ripping Musgrave, I get it. I totally understand, like, sometimes why is Amari disappearing? But let me just spin this around a minute. I love Amari Cooper. I love the fact that he's a nice, honorable young man. But I want a little bit of diva in that guy. He needs to man up, step up. You know, there's reasons why guys like the big receivers that he was pointing out come and get the ball. They want the ball. They demand the ball. They're in the huddle. Give me the ball. And Amari, you know, he's got to be the one to step up and say, give me the ball. That's not on Musgrave. I mean, at some point, you got to go up and get the ball. And, you know, you can rip Musgrave all you want, but some of these teams, like, you know, the Giants, they don't have a lot of offensive weapons. Musgrave's got a whole bunch of different guys he can go to. He doesn't need to go to Crabtree or Amari on every other play. So a lot of Raider fans are a lot of times ripping Musgrave, but he's got an offense that he can pick and choose from. He's not perfect, but I think Musgrave is the least of our problems right now.
Jack, thanks. Appreciate the phone call. Thank you so much. We're up against it. Didn't mean to cut you off. Well, I did mean to cut you off there, but nothing personal. I like the phone call.
We good just call, Jack.
Have a break coming up. With Amari, just be careful what you wish for. Do you want Odell Beckham?
No.
Guy makes plays, but on the biggest of stages in his first career playoff game, how did he look yesterday? And that is a lousy Packer secondary. Don't get it confused. They didn't just play the Texans or the Broncos. They went up against the lousy Packer secondary, and ODB was nowhere to be found for that entire game. That was one of the worst performances he's had in his career. That's what you get in a diva wide receiver, though, if that's what you want. I'm cool with Amari being quiet. You know what? That's the new age of NFL wide receivers. All right, we're going to have way more on this throughout the show. We're going to break down the Odell Beckham situation in about 20 minutes. But Matt Maiocco's up next regarding everything that's taking place with the 49ers. 15 is the number right now of candidates who either have been interviewed or will be interviewed for two open vacancies. 15. Is this team going to get it right? We'll find out next. Joe Lowe and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
What are the Raiders' biggest needs heading into next season? Lincoln Kennedy joins us coming up at 8:05. Now, back to Raider Mondays. Here's Joe, Lowe, and Dibs.
Fascinating conversation at the break. Man. Natural birth versus C-section. Which way do you go? Joe, Lowe, and Dibs, 95.7.
Is that today's take your pick poll question? Because it might have, should have been.
You know what? We might have to call an audible on that. Take your pick poll question coming up in 14 minutes at 7:45. Very happy right now. Going to the phones. Matt Maiocco, 49er Insider, CSN Bay Area with Joe, Lowe, and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Good morning, Matt. How's everything going? It looks like we've got 15 total candidates who have either interviewed already or will be interviewing for the vacant head coaching and general manager job moving forward. Any timeline on when we might be able to expect an announcement with either job?
Well, I would say certainly not for the next week and a half, 2 weeks. You know, I think they have the Seattle guys scheduled next week with Tom Cable expected to interview on Sunday, and then the GM candidates, Trent Kirchner and Scott Fitterer, scheduled to interview on Monday. The longer this goes, you know, and if it goes up toward Super Bowl, I mean, it tells you one thing, I think. It's that whoever is still out there and available to be hired but not eligible yet to be hired because the team is still playing moves to the top of the list. So, you know, from day one, I kind of thought that the one guy who probably was the most attractive of this current head coaching pool is Josh McDaniels. If the 49ers want Josh McDaniels, and you know, there's no reason to think that he's not in that running, but a few other teams have interviewed him too, then they got to wait. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to say, well, you know, he's in the Super Bowl. We don't want to wait that long. Let's just hire somebody now. And I think that's part of the reason that you get the coach general manager fusion, if you will, is that if you match a guy who's going to be coaching in the Super Bowl with the GM, you can hire that GM weeks earlier and the GM can start assembling the staff and getting things lined up. So when the head coach signs on the dotted line, some of the pieces are already in place and some of the work has already been done.
So Matt, what is going to come first, the chicken or the egg? Do you think this team is going to hire a head coach before the GM? Because they brought in head coaches already, head coaches candidates, or do you think they're going to go GM first?
You know what? I think they interview, or I think they basically hire the two positions at the same time. You know, whether it's announced at the same time, that remains to be seen. But I don't think that they're going to hire one position without already having the other position in place as well. I mean, I think that was the whole thing that Jed York was trying to impress upon people a week ago today, was that he didn't want there to be any level of mystery with, you know, the head coach not knowing what he's going to get from the general manager, not knowing what he's going to get from the head coach. So he wants a symbiotic relationship with these guys, where, you know, maybe not necessarily they've worked together in the past, but they certainly know each other and respect each other and can get along and work toward one goal, rather than, you know, when things start to go south, you know, there's not the finger pointing, there's not the, you know, oh, it's because of the players. You know, that's what the head coach is saying. It's not my fault, it's because of the players. Or the general manager saying, man, the players are good, it just, the coaching staff doesn't put them in the right position. So, you know, I think that the one thing that Jed York wants to do with this is make it very clear to both the coach and the GM that you guys are in this together. And if one of you fails, both of you fail.
And Jed York and Parag Marate are back east doing these interviews right now, Matt. Is there any outside advisement that they're getting on this interview process, or are they just doing the interviews themselves and basically deciding between the two of them?
Well, I think any advising would have been done to put together the list of people they want to talk to. But I think once you get in the room, you know, to my knowledge, it's only Jed York and Parag Marate doing the interview. So I think probably with about any job opening, the outside advisement comes from, well, let's put together our initial list of interviewees. And then once you know what you're looking for, and now you get in the room, and on Sunday or Saturday, for instance, that Josh McDaniels decided to interview with three teams. I think pretty much every team with an opening wanted to talk to him except for Denver. So McDaniels narrowed his list down to three teams that he felt like I can work for. And 3-hour interviews each of these teams had with him, the Jaguars, the Rams, and then the 49ers last. So, the coaches know what they're looking for. I think these teams know what they're looking for. And, in the case with the 49ers, I'm sure, they're looking for something. But all of these candidates they're talking to, and especially in the case of McDaniels, I would say probably McDaniels did more interviewing of the 49ers or just as much than the 49ers did interviewing of him. Now, he's been through this process with the 49ers, so he knows them, and they probably have a pretty good relationship because there is some history there. So I guess the thing that I would look to would be McDaniels has been through this. He knows the 49ers, and so apparently nothing he's heard from them in the past has turned him off from wanting to pursue this opportunity again. And I think it becomes a more attractive situation now that a guy like him won't have to enter into a union with Trent Baalke, that the person, the coach will be able to, in essence, go into it knowing who the general manager is going to be and feeling confident that he can work with that general manager.
Well, when you say that they know what they're looking for, most of these teams know what they're looking for, do you feel comfortable saying that when you look at the San Francisco 49ers, Jim Harbaugh gone, hired, you said, you heard, Jed York say, I want a teacher, want a leader, Tom Sula gone, brings in Chip Kelly, gone after a year. So what gives you confidence in that you know that Jed York knows what he's looking for? And do you feel that they're capable? Or do you feel that they're going to make the right decision in this?
Oh, of course not. No, no. I don't think you can have confidence in it because of the track record the 49ers have. And, the one thing, though, that, it was Baalke who made those calls on, hiring Jim Harbaugh, which obviously a very good hire, kind of blew up at the end there. And, for whatever reasons, a lot of it, I'm sure we don't know. The decision was made to get rid of him, and then the disastrous decision to hire Jim Tom Sula instead of Adam Gase, although Adam Gase is probably pretty happy it turned out that way in retrospect. And then last year with Chip Kelly, so those were Baalke's decisions, and I think that maybe Jed York feels like I could have done better than that. I could have done better than Baalke. And I want to have more say in this matter of who my head coach is. So, but I mean, is there any reason to have confidence? No, of course not. But I guess I'll kind of quote York from a week ago when he said, there's nothing I can say, meaning Jed York, there's nothing he could say on that day to make anybody believe that he was going to do the right thing. You just kind of have to see this thing play out. And so, I'm kind of taking the same approach. I mean, there's certainly nothing I could say or would even want to say or, wouldn't want to put my name behind saying, oh, there's no question he's going to make the right call. I mean, you never know if he's going to make the right call. And the track record necessarily hasn't been very good. The only other time in recent history where the 49ers have hired both the general manager and the coach in the same offseason, the results, the immediate results weren't very good, and that's being Mike Nolan and Scott McLuhan. But, history kind of proved out that, they did a pretty good job as far as lining up the talent and getting that ready for the next, not even the next regime, is the regime after the next regime. So, the bulk of the players that Jim Harbaugh won with and Trent Baalke was the executive of the year that season, those are players acquired by a head coach and general manager that at least for a couple years worked pretty well together. So we'll see, the timetable it took a long time for the, for that group to get the players together and for the 49ers to start winning. I think the 49ers would much more, you know, they don't want it to take that long.
Matt, we're up against it here. I want to jump in with just one last question. The Senior Bowl practices start in 13 days, and that's the last of the college football all-star games. Who is going to handle the scouting if you don't have a coach and a GM hired by that point?
That's a good question. I mean, I think Tom Gamble is still part of the organization. I would imagine that he would play a huge role in getting that set up. But, you know, everybody's job, nobody knows if they're going to be working. It's going to be up to the next general manager and the next head coach to decide who works. But I would assume that they'd want to have the general manager in place by then. And that would probably appear to be the most likely scenario, that if the head coach is still in the playoffs and not available to be hired, then they would have their head coach in line with their general manager in the building with the next head coach, just waiting to sign on the dotted line.
49er insider from CSN Bay Area, Matt Maiocco with Joe Lo and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. Matt, thank you so much for the insight and your time. We appreciate it. Good luck with all this stuff, and we'll catch up with you again next week.
All right, sounds good, guys. Talk to you soon.
Here's a question for you. Does Odell Beckham and the New York Giant receiving unit deserve the blame for what happened at Lambeau yesterday? You want to go down to Miami and party, that's one thing, but you got to show up over the weekend. That and more next. Joe Lo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
What are the Raiders' biggest needs heading into next season? Lincoln Kennedy joins us coming up at 8:05. Now, back to Raider Mondays. Here's Joe, Lo, and Dibs.
Not exactly the most compelling of wild card games this weekend. We pretty much went 4-for-4 in terms of the favorites won all four games. They covered all four spreads. Your scoring differential was in the neighborhood. It was actually plus 76.
Wow.
The four losers were outscored by 76 points in these four games, 121-45. You take Alabama's win over Washington and Clemson's win over Ohio State. We're not exactly getting a whole lot of great playoff action. That's all right. Tonight, there's still an opportunity to have a great game, and I think we'll get a great game tonight. And next week, with the divisional round and everything coming, I think we're going to get more competitive football, but not an exceptional weekend for the NFL there, Dibs.
No, nor the college football playoffs as well. It's six up and six down of all blowouts. And if memory serves me correctly, normally the divisional round, which is coming this weekend, is where the blowouts happen. Wild card weekend, you normally have some closer games, so maybe the trend will be reversed this year.
That'd be nice, because this is a fun weekend, but you've got all these teams coming off the bye. Here's your early look at the four matchups you're going to be faced with starting Saturday, 1:35 p.m. It's going to be Seattle and Russell Wilson at Atlanta and Matt Ryan. The only playoff victory of Matt Ryan's career came in the divisional round against the Seattle Seahawks. That was the year before the Seahawks won the Super Bowl. Atlanta opened as a 3.5-point favorite. They are now a 4.5-point favorite, over under a 51. Just initial. No one's going to be held to these, but your initial thoughts on that game.
Right now, I'd have to say Atlanta. You look at Atlanta Falcons, they're playing at home. They probably want a little revenge. They've been in this situation before. Matty Ice, he's earned it. He's in conversations about even the MVP. They can run the ball. Julio's healthy. They got receivers. Defense is playing better. And they're going to be on the turf and at home. So, I would have to take that home team. I'd take Atlanta.
Dibs, your initial thoughts, Seattle at Atlanta.
Same thing. You know, and Seattle normally is a pretty good road team and an unbelievable home team. But this year, Seattle did not do very well on the road. 3-4-1 away from home in the regular season. And Atlanta, that offense with the two-headed monster at running back, very good, especially indoors. I like Atlanta. And I really like the over in that one.
Houston and Brock Osweiler traveled to New England to take on Tom Brady and the Patriots. 15.5-point favorites. New England is a 15.5-point favorite. Now, a few years back, when the Broncos and Tim Tebow, five years ago yesterday, I believe it was, knocked off the Steelers in overtime of the wild card round, they traveled to New England the following week. They were 2-touchdown underdogs and got blown out of the water at Foxborough. Any reason to believe the Texans will make this game competitive?
No. I mean, Roman Goodell is going to have his hands full. You know, he's a defensive guru, defensive-minded guy, and so he He coached under Belichick, and he was their D coordinator when he was with Belichick there. And they play good defense. Houston Texans are playing good defense, but they're going to get motorboated.
Dibs, agree?
Yeah, I do agree. The New England defense, I think, is one of the more underrated units in the NFL this year. They've been terrific. I can't see Houston getting into double figures on points. That game feels like a 28-9 or 35-9 kind of drubbing, or a motorboating, as some would say.
Lincoln Kennedy is going to join us in about 10 minutes to talk about the Raiders. 10:05 a.m. Sunday. It's Pittsburgh at Kansas City. The bookmakers got this spread wrong. I said it yesterday. I said it this morning. And now the corrections are taking place in Las Vegas. Kansas City and Pittsburgh opened as a pick 'em. Andy Reid, with an extra week to prepare at home and all that balance on his team against the Steelers and a banged-up Ben Roethlisberger, and you're going to send that out a pick'em? Well, guess what? Here comes the money. Kansas City's now a two-point favorite. How do you see this one? This should be the most competitive game of the weekend per the Las Vegas point spread.
Yeah. I look at this game. You look at Kansas City in the home of the Chiefs. That place is tough to win. You see the way that Kansas City's playing defense. You see that Andy Reid, how he's coaching. You look at Alex Smith. Pittsburgh's going to have their hands full. I think that it's going to be a good game, but you got to take the home team, Kansas City, Dibs.
Dibs, Pittsburgh coming for an upset?
I like Pittsburgh in the upset here. And what I saw from the Steelers yesterday outside the box score is Pittsburgh was out there playing for keeps, not only to win that game, but they were looking to knock people out. The hit on Matt Moore was one of the biggest hits you've seen in the past 5 years, and it's that mentality that Pittsburgh brings. And ultimately, Kansas City is still Alex Smith, and it's still Andy Reid, a guy who tends to come up small in January. I like Pittsburgh in the upset straight up.
Miami's got no chance of winning a Super Bowl ever unless they grab the one seed. You saw exactly why yesterday. They're in South Florida. They hang out on South Beach. They're in the nice weather. They couldn't get to the heaters and their jackets fast enough. As soon as those guys came off the field, they went running for coats. It was like it's like storming the beaches in Normandy. That's the way they make it look. It's a football game. What the hell is going on out there? It's a football game. To those guys, they couldn't have gotten out of that game fast enough. That secondary was hideous. That was a team that had no, they didn't want to be there. That's Miami for you. If you don't grab a one seed, you'll never win in Baltimore. You'll never win in Pittsburgh. You'll never win in New York against the Jets if they ever get good. Buffalo, New England, yeah. You name it. They are not built to go play in the cold weather. You saw it yesterday. Scared of the weather. Miami, Pittsburgh came out, popped them in the mouth, and that team was just looking up at the scoreboard thinking, how long until we can get out of here? Le'Veon Bell, by the way, he's on video game mode.
Yeah.
That guy is on easy
stop and go
video game PlayStation mode to the point where behind the line of scrimmage, he's hitting R1 to shuffle right, L1 to shuffle left, and then he sees the opening, and then bang,
he's bursting
through it.
The burst is unbelievable.
It's funny watching
No
that.
One's got vision like that. Nobody in the NFL has vision like that
Nobody.
At the running back position. Final game Sunday, 1:40 p.m. Pacific. Rodgers and the Packers traveling to Dallas to take on the number one seed, Dallas Cowboys. The Cowboys are a 4-point favorite, over under 52.
I like Dallas. I still like Dallas. Like you alluded to, I think Dallas can be able to throw the ball all over the field. I'm not sold on Green Bay secondary. I'm not sold on Green Bay's run defense. Aaron Rodgers, he showed me a lot of things yesterday, what he could do, in the pocket. And if I say, hey, if there's one game that I think the upset, it would be more Pittsburgh. But out of all the rest of them, I like the home dogs.
Dibs.
Green Bay, I mean, no team playing better right now offensively than the Packers. And I don't think that Dallas is that daunting of a defense. Ezekiel Elliott, obviously a big factor. If they give him the ball 30 times and they keep Aaron Rodgers off the field, they can beat the Pack. But I like Green Bay with a road upset and more Dallas disappointment.
Time for the Take Your Pick poll question brought to you by FH Daily and Novato Chevrolet. Anna, good morning.
Good morning, fellas. Today's question, which team had the most impressive win over Wild Card Weekend? Was it the Texans, the Packers, the Steelers, or the Seahawks? You can let us know what you think by going to 957thegame.com. Also go to Twitter at 957thegame and use the hashtag Take Your Pick. Let us know what you think.
Dibs, we'll start with you today. Who had the most impressive win this past weekend?
I think I'll go with Green Bay. It was the game that everyone said was going to be the closest, and the Giants got within one, and then Green Bay flipped the switch offensively and took that game over. Aaron Rodgers is playing with an unbelievable confidence right now. The Pittsburgh win was impressive, but I think Green Bay, the way they completely polished off the Giants late, that's who I'm going with.
Low.
For me, it was Pittsburgh, man. Pittsburgh, you look at Big Ben. He's like the guy to seven-step drop and throw the ball vertical. They didn't. They motorboated me. It was three steps. He got the ball out of their hand. They ran a lot of quick screens. They hit the perimeters quick. They put a lot of pressure on Miami. They said, nope, we're not holding the ball. We're not going to let Cam and Wake get to us. We're going to get the ball out of their hands quick. They ran the ball. You saw Miami sitting back there playing too deep. They ran them out of the too deep. Front four guys didn't show up. It was pretty impressive what I saw at a Pittsburgh. So Pittsburgh, to me, was more impressive.
Anna.
I got to go with the Packers on this one. It was closer early on than when you had that Hail Mary to end the half from Aaron Rodgers. He's white hot right now, so I got to go Packers.
All right. Odell Beckham and the Giant wide receiving unit made some headlines, big-time headlines, early in the week after they took out the Washington Redskins in the final game of the season. They decided they were going to go down to Miami. They had a little boat trip. They decided it was smart to post it on social media. They opened up Pandora's box. So in the wake of all that, all they needed to do was go out on Sunday against the Packers and perform. And then everyone would forget about this trip because this is what guys do on their off days. When you have means, you're going to do things like go to Miami and hang out on a boat. Well, they didn't perform. The Giants got shellacked at Lambeau, and OBJ had arguably the worst game of his career. Here's Beckham after the game when asked if the Miami trip had any bearing on his performance whatsoever.
I think it did a great job at creating distractions for us. And it's unfortunate. That's just the way this world is. There's just no way you could connect something that happened 7 days ago to this game today and how we came out and played and how the Packers have won seven in a row and how they scored 38 points and how they executed. They came up with the third downs. They did what they needed to do. So the connection is just not there, in my opinion, but everybody's going to have their own opinion. So,
Low, does he deserve criticism? Do he and the Giant receivers deserve criticism for just doing something on their off day?
Hell yeah, they do. And don't give me, this is what you do on your off day. No, you don't. Not when it's the playoffs. You know how hard it took me 8 years to get to the playoffs. Shame on you and shame on the leaders on that team that didn't grab this guy and say, don't do this, man. This is a selfish act, Joe. Look, right after the season, like today, you know how long this guy's got? He doesn't got to be back till January, February, March. To March, OTAs, off-season program doesn't start till March, mid-March, April. So January, February, March, April. So you got 3-4 months. He can go to Hawaii. He can go to Africa. He can go to Houdini. He can go anywhere that he wants to go and go. He can go set parties, go to Brazil. He can do anything. But you chose last weekend. And I saw plays in that game. Yeah. And did it affect him? Hell yeah, it affected him. He dropped touchdown balls. Not just that. After he dropped the first ball, he was in shell shock. Come out before the game, running around with your shirt off, trying to make a mark because you're thinking about what everyone's saying. Yeah, it was a distraction. And it affected his ball game, without a doubt.
I don't think you can say that. I mean, guys drop footballs all the time just because they spent time in Miami a week ago. I admit it's a bad look, but I don't think you can necessarily connect the dots from an off.
You dropped seven in the whole year, and now you dropped three. You don't think that it messed with his psyche? Once he dropped, you don't think, what are people thinking? Why would you run out there with your shirt off at the beginning of the game? Was that a correlation in your opinion?
I mean, I think when you have a body that's that good. And take it from me, Lo, I can barely keep my shirt on. It's a gift that we sculpted bodies have to give to society. Lo, come on, Daddy.
Put it like this.
That was nice.
Thank I you. Love you guys. But outside of 6 to 10 a.m., I don't give a damn what you do on your free time.
Appreciate
outside
that.
Of 6 to 10 a.m., you go do whatever you want to do. Be with your families, go out and drink, have a good time, do whatever you want. But 6 to 10 a.m. in this room, bring your A game. And if you don't, you'll get criticized, as I'd expect to be criticized or working with anyone else. When you're on the clock, you're paid to produce. Simple. He wanted to go to Miami. I don't think it had any direct effect. You're on vacation. It's 6 days ago. You're an athlete. But you didn't show up and play. You didn't perform. What you did was you gave the media and you give everybody out there fodder to take you down if you didn't perform. You can go out there and play well and lose, and people say, well, you know what? He was just hanging out. It's an off day. He's got means. He has the ability to fly to Miami and hang out on his off day. Don't we wish we could do that? All that stuff's fine as long as you produce. When you don't produce, people look to take you down. And you gave the media and the fans the perfect reason to come after you because you were screwing around on your off week. That's all well and good. All well and good as long as you show up on Sundays. And he failed to do that. Failed to show up. And then he's punching holes in the wall after the game. The guy's a loose cannon. He's a great receiver, but he's a loose cannon. And ultimately, he'll be just like a Pac-Man Jones, where in a very crucial moment, you'll need him. He'll lose his mind. He'll pick up a flag, and it'll cost you the game.
He couldn't handle it mentally, Joe. That's the difference. Michael Irvin can go out and do whatever he wanted to do, but he would come in and perform. And he would, and then Lawrence Taylor would go out and party and do this thing and still go get you 4 or 5 sacks. Now, here's the thing that it did affect him. He couldn't handle it mentally because he went out there on the field, and after he dropped it, he started thinking about the things that it did. So that was a cause and effect that allowed this guy to not perform well.
Michael Jordan would drink and gamble all night, play golf in the morning, and drop 50 in the evening. No one cared because he produced. It's a results-oriented business, and when you don't produce results, people are coming after you. That's on OBJ. That's on the rest of the receivers for the New York Giants. Lincoln Kennedy in 1 minute. Don't go anywhere. Joe Lo and Dibs, 95.7 The Game.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.